It is another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. On our latest instalment, we have Wales legend Adam Jones, who kindly joined us. He talked about all his experiences on the international stage, as well as his experiences with the Lions. And he also talked a little bit about his time at Quins before getting into his Mars 15. Once again, this is split into two parts. So the first part will focus on kind of Adam's journey in the game and his Wales career. Obviously, he does talk as well about his retirement and all that went with it from the international game. And then part two will focus on the British and Irish Lions, as well as his time at Quins, and as I said there, his Mars 15. But coming up first is part one of our special podcast with Adam Jones. Hello and welcome back to yet another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Rugby returned to our lives last weekend, which I think we were all glad to see as Super Rugby kicked things off over in New Zealand. And there was a bit of a New Zealand feel to the podcast. We were lucky to be joined by Dane Coles and Joe Marchant, who featured on the podcast. So if you haven't listened to any of them already, it really is worth listening to get a bit of an insight into Southern Hemisphere rugby and Super Rugby as well. And it was great to chat to Dane and Joe. And I know Rob Shotton, who once again joins us on the podcast today, enjoyed chatting to Joe about how good New Zealand is, Rob. And I'm pretty sure you sold it extremely well.
I did, yeah. I think I've mentioned New Zealand too many times now in the podcast. I've had a few people telling me to stop and shut up about New Zealand now.
And of course, Rob joins me this afternoon alongside fellow Loose Heads co-founders, Mark Shotton and Dave Nicol. Guys, how are we today?
Very well, thank you.
Good, thank you.
Great to have the full compliment back as well, Mark.
Yeah, sorry, I ducked out of the last one. Yeah, yeah.
No, we're a better team with you in it, Mark. That was a quick consensus we came to. So it's probably about time now. I've whittled on for a bit. We introduce our next guest to the podcast. And between myself, Dave, Mark and Rob, we've been quite setting the bar high in terms of the guests we've had on the podcast since we launched this 3 months ago. And I'm pretty sure our next guest firmly falls under that bracket. It's a pleasure to welcome three-time Grand Slam winner, former British and Irish Lion and current scrum coach at Harlequins, Adam Jones, to the podcast. Adam, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. How's things with you?
Yeah, good, thanks, yeah. Yeah, well, it's been a strange old time, isn't it? But it's, I've been back in Wales, so it's as long as I've been back in Wales for, since I've been in the Quins now. So I've been quite appreciative and, of what everyone's doing. But trying to just have a bit of time in Wales has been great.
You mentioned there, Adam, that you've been back in Wales during this lockdown period. I mean, you do obviously commute between London and Wales. So has it been quite nice being back at home during this time?
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been, as I said, it's having a chance to do it much, really, only like one day here or there sort of thing, and then pre-season, before pre-season. But yeah, I haven't missed the travelling, I've got to be honest with you. I think not even the travelling, it's the... I can't seem to stop going past, can't go past a service station without someone stopping it. And so that's been actually pretty good. So, I've enjoyed it a lot. And yeah, I know everyone wants to get back to rugby, but, you know, I'm one of those. As long as it's safe first, then, you know, then we can crack into it. But I'm sure we'll come back soon enough.
Absolutely, Adam. And on the podcast over sort of the last few months we've been doing this, obviously the COVID-19 situation's been going on, and we've talked about how connecting with people has been really important during this time, Adam, for mental health reasons. And obviously the Loose Heads podcast is all about raising awareness for mental health, and the use rugby as a platform to do so as well. So how important is it for guys to connect through rugby to raise awareness for mental health, do you think, Adam?
Oh, it's massive. As you said, it's it's a tough time for everyone else, isn't it? And regardless of what situation in New York, it's a tough thing to do. And I think just the little things like just speaking to mates, it's a massive thing. Even, we do sort of quizzes or every weekend and stuff. So, something to almost look forward to, and, gives you something to, as I said, look forward to. Because we're a lot more locked down than you guys. So, we still aren't, we're still very much... And they lock the key a bit for 5 miles anyway. So, seeing family and that, and it's a tough one. And it's huge. It's certainly I've used it as a time to sort of upskill myself in different things. Around the mental side of the game and on the tactical side of the game. And it's massive. And that's the thing. Rugby is such a good community. Like, I think everyone wants to help. Everyone wants to there's no sort of, oh, I don't want to give anyone away my trade secrets or whatnot, but everyone just wants to help, and everyone, you know, as use this as a positive as much as you can be in this, yeah, in what is a bit of a bonkers time, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Adam. And you mentioned that, which is pretty much one of the main principles for Lucid, that rugby does bring communities together. And we know in the Premiership that a lot of many clubs do have, you know, communities and foundations which they use. And we spoke to Joe Marchant last week on our podcast about the Quinns Foundation, and he's been involved with sort of the mental health areas around that. So is it great to see these clubs really take an initiative on these kind of issues?
Oh, yes. It's not just the big clubs. I think is one pretty close to, you know, it's not so much my heart, but where I'm from, where I grew up. It's I'm from Abercrombie, but like down the, there's a mental health group called Yorgets, and they're like older boys, and they play tetra, obviously not playing tetra rugby now, but you know, it was built up. I think one of the boys had concussion and had a few issues with that, so he's and they've done some amazing things. They do you know, they've done raised money for charity over this, like bike rides and stuff, and you know, they had like Michael Liners give him a shout out, Marla give him a shout out, you know, and Corbis Vise, like, and you know, and it's, rugby players appreciate how hard it is, and you know, and rugby, you know, rugby guys appreciate when you know you don't always see it, but when your teammate's down, you know, I think a rugby guy would be that type of, with that type of community where you can go and give someone a helping hand or have a chat or just a bit of a, you know, even if they want a vent or whatever it is. And so no, it's been, you know, it's been great to see. I think all rugby clubs have great to see. It's based in Estrigan Lyceum, this you know, a fantastic cause they're doing, and you know, they're doing some good things.
And from a player perspective, Adam, as well, we've had a couple of players who have come on the podcast, and they've talked about their injuries and how tough it is for a player to sort of recover from an injury during that setback. And looking at sort of your career, I mean, two of the injuries you picked up were on the Lions tour and in a World Cup semi-final. So you seem to bounce back from a playing perspective really well. But how tough was that period for you during your career?
Yeah, it was hard. I think the 09 one wasn't, the Lions wasn't too bad, just because it was sort of, it was the first big injury I had, and I probably played 6 or 7 years constantly international club, playing a lot of games for the Ospreys as well. And yeah, it was probably good to have a break, really. I think it probably helped me that way. You obviously miss the rugby, and you miss, you know, I was lucky to have a good, you know, great physios working with me in the Ospreys, Towers and Brian, and they work wonders. And so, you know, it was always a good crack, and the good fitness coaches there as well. So it was, but it's the day-to-day rugby you miss, and that's the frustration, really, especially, you know, when you were in a team then, was that 2009-10, you know, we had a good side of the Ospreys, and, you know, we thought we were going to do something special, but obviously we didn't quite get to the level we needed it to be. But yeah, it was tough. But I think the semi-final with France was hard for me. It was just because I played in the two sort of biggest games I played in, I got injured in both of them, and that gutted me a bit. I think, you know, I had a few, injury-wise, that was, you know, it wasn't a massive injury. I think I tore my calf, I think it was a 10-centimeter tear, which, you know, was a decent size, but yeah, it was just the fact of the World Cup. And I knew that even if we did get to the final, you know, I wouldn't play, because I wouldn't have been able to be fit enough. So that, you know, straight away, that's what you start thinking about. And then, you know, obviously we almost get there. We pushed France as hard as we could, and with 14 men as well, which was, you know, pretty impressive. But yeah, as soon as you know with injury, you know it's a weak injury, you know you'll be able to get back. But no, that was the hard bit for me, I think. That was the really tough bit, yeah.
And we see with players getting injured as well, Adam, now on social media, teammates do rally around and they may put messages out. Is that really important as well, that every single member of the team gets around these boys? Because with rugby, these injuries could be for a long time.
Yeah, look, it's rugby players are good, you know. There's, you know, obviously there's banter and that type of stuff, but when it comes down to it, you know, they always got your back, I think, and that's the main thing. I think it's the biggest difference I've seen over the course of my career, from when I started and to when I sort of finished. Then there's always that support network around. You've obviously got your family and friends, and your teammates, but there's a support network of people you can see if you need to, you know, speak to anyone who can help you just a little bit better, more than the chat. And I think I've always looked back. I think if I, when I started playing and I started getting, you know, I'm sick of talking about how many, I used to get subbed after half an hour. and that, you know, for, and that I subbed for five, I think it was five or six test matches. And, you know, I got injured in a game then for the Ospreys on, I think it was a week before we played the French. And I was glad because I didn't have to go through the sort of, didn't have to go through the humiliation of being subbed after half an hour. And I was glad I got injured, glad I was out injured. But there was no network, there was no, no one really knew how to help me. You know, I was devastated. I was gutted, you know, it was, you know, I reverted back to my bad habits of eating and, you know, drinking too much. And I didn't have that sort of, players were probably a little bit more, not they didn't know what to say, but back then it was a bit more like, it was just a pat on the back of, God, you'll be right, Bob, you'll be right, or whatever. But it was almost, it was really tough to do on your own, really. And that's it. And, I had a great career in the end after it, but that sort of block of 6 months, I was glad I got injured then against Munster in a game, just because, I just didn't want to go through the humiliation.
And it seems, just listening to you, Adam, that sort of stigma around players not knowing what to say is less now, because a lot of people know, and it's more in the public eye about mental health awareness. And with Looseheads, Sean Edwards is actually the patron of the foundation, and Mark's very close to Sean, aren't you, Mark? And it was great to hear his views the other week.
Yeah, we share a passion for broken noses. you will know him obviously a lot closer and longer than I've ever known him. What was he like to work with close up, and those legendary training sessions that he talks about?
I loved him. I thought he was so good to me. Like when I was a player, I craved simplicity, and I craved the coaches just giving me a job to do and be good at one job, sort of thing. And be like, when Gatland and Sean came in, he was very much be what they want a traditional tight end prop to be, you know, do well in the scrum, you know, tackles, you know, if you have to carry as hard as you can and hit drugs and do your job in the lineup. And that was simple. And before but that, there was a bit, you know, some coaches wanted to be all singing, all dancing, and they wanted, and I think it wasn't just them, it was me. I wanted, I saw what Gethin Jenkins was like, I saw what Duncan Jones was like, you know, I wanted to be a bit more like them, but when I wasn't. So when Gat and Sean came in, they simplified everything down, and, you know, you just make your tackles and, you know, scrum well and hit drugs. And that was simplified everything for me. And Sean was great because I was probably one of the lucky ones. I never really got too many of the stares off him, or the angry looks, because he sort of, he obviously had never played prop. I remember him saying to me, he understands how hard it is in the scrum for a tight end, from, you know, speaking to people like Phil Vickery and these type of guys. And so he realises, like, just how much you kind of, you put your body through. So if you did actually do anything with Sean well in the game, you know, a tackle or whatever, he'd probably overpraise the tight ends, because he saw that as, the hardest job in the field. And so he was great. I loved him, you know. We had a team of people who didn't want to blitz. Didn't want to blitz defence. And we had a team of, boys who were against it. And it was almost one of those ones where he came in and he said, if you don't want to blitz, then, you know, get out of the room. You know, for the 3 or 4 years I'd been there, it was always like reservations about it. No one really wanted to do it. They wanted to whatever. But it was, he came in and said, oh, look, this is what we can do. And, this is it. Just get out of the room for this. And one thing it does stick with me always with Sean is, I'd had a year where I think the Ospreys, and I'd signed for the Blues, and then I'd retired. Anyway, I'd retired from international rugby, and we were in London, and we were just having a coffee, myself and the wife, and I had a phone call, and Sean's number comes up. And it was bizarre, because he just said, oh, look, you know, I'm getting to retire, but you've been amazing, and, you know, I just wanted to wish you all the best in the future. It was more than a 20-second call, but he was like, it meant so much being him as well, because he's Sean Edwards, and, you know, I grew up watching the great Wigan team, you know, and him playing. But, you know, the fact he took time just to ring me to say, congratulations on the career, and I enjoyed working with you, blah, blah, blah. And I just started crying on the phone, and then I hung up on it. So it was, it meant a lot.
Yeah, he's been, that's brilliant. He's been defiantly and brilliantly honest with us since he's been associated with Looseheads, and it's a pleasure to have him. The shoulder he adds to our to the weight of what we're trying to do is massive. Yeah. It goes without saying. Brilliant to hear.
He's I got so much time for him. He's I think a few of the boys used to find him a bit like, you know, because you'd have a face and you'd be quite angry and he wouldn't say much and all that. But I had so much time for him. I remember we played, I think we played Italy away, and we were sort of, there was a group of us on a table who we'd call the boys who didn't mind a drink. And there was a group on the table, the other tables were the more professional boys, not more professional, but more the boys who, you know, looked after themselves a bit better. And he came over and sat with us because he was like, oh, I'm on the coach's table or the management table, nobody's drinking, I'm not in fun. So he came and sat with us because he wanted to have a few red wines and get on the beer a bit. So he was, I got a lot of time for him. And I'm glad that he's doing really well in France now.
I think Mark might have been on the wrong end of one of Sean's deadly stares in the past, because Mark used to play with Sean way back when.
A million years ago, yeah. It's all black and white.
And we'll definitely come on to sort of your time with Wales later on, Adam. But let's just go back to the start for when rugby started for you. You mentioned before that you played for your local team. And I was reading an article that Rugby Journal did, I think, a couple of years ago, which was republished a few months ago. And it mentioned sort of that rugby was obviously a passion for you at school, and sort of the textbooks were secondary. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, look, I didn't. My older brother was, you know, very academic, really bright, sort of, I think he was head boy in school, sort of straight A student, and I was probably polar opposite, really. Not because I wasn't like, I was never a dick, and I wasn't really a, you know, I'd never really get in trouble, but I just didn't have the sort of capacity to work. And, you know, if it was something I enjoyed, then I loved it. You know, I knew, you know, you asked me anything about rugby in the 80s, 90s, 70s even, I would have probably answered on music and stuff and certain. But like, I couldn't get my head around school, you know. And I got three GCSEs in the end, and I only got the three because my mother took me to a tutor who did the English and maths, which I got English and maths. So when I put my mind to it, I was all right. I could like do the tough subject. But then I got catering as well, which is unsurprisingly. But I enjoyed the crack with the boys. Just just didn't want to put the work in, really. It was just, and then the stupid thing was, when I did get my GCSE results, you know, I remember I sat in my bedroom crying, thinking like, you know, what have I done? No, what have I done? What, you know, I haven't worked hard enough, and get it, I didn't get them. But then, you know, when I look back at it, I didn't work hard enough. I didn't, you know, I'd worked hard enough to get the three, and I did, but you know, the other ones, I just didn't. I was more concerned about playing rugby and eating. Really.
And with your rugby, Adam, obviously you joined Neath. We had Jonathan Davis on the podcast probably about a month ago, and he spoke so fondly about his time at Neath. And if I'm right in saying, Adam, you joined the club when you were 19, if that's right?
So I came to Abercrombie, my local team, and we had a good side. You know, we played in it was called the Central Leagues, which was pretty, you know, tough, forward orientated. So I got a chance to play against a lot of older boys and a lot of old props to, you know, learn and have a few digs off. But it was I really enjoyed playing. All of us were good mates in the club, you know, within sort of 5-6 years of each other. So it was all, a good laugh. But I never took it really seriously. I played sort of district level and this type of thing, and county level, but like you always on the bench county level, but never quite like got to the World 16s, 18s, 19s, that type of thing. And a guy called John Davis, who was, the sort of secretary of the youth team in Abercrombie, he said, do you want to go to Neath? It's under 21s league. And yeah, I was like, oh, amazing. Yeah, I wasn't fit. And he said, we had a meeting in the Knoll, and Roland Phillips was a coach who, I don't know if you met Roland, you know, straight away, he's pretty, actually unbelievably engaging. You know, you fall for him straight away sort of thing. And he's such a good bloke and good laugh. And, he said, we're just going to work on the skills over the summer. You know, we know we're probably not fit enough, but we're going to have to see what sort of skill level you guys are. And it went from there. So obviously, no fitness in the summer helped me. Well, it didn't help me, but appealed to me. Just train every week. Got into it, and we had the first game. I think we did playing against Cardiff, and we did really well in the scrum. And went from there. It was, and I had had a good front row as well. So the first game, it was a guy called Mark Jones, the prop, and Adam Matthews, hooker, and myself. And, you know, we had a few, I think Steve Tandy was playing. He was our captain, and Kevin James. It wasn't a massive amount of first teamers because the squads weren't that big then. But I enjoyed it. Second game was the first time I came across Paul James. So obviously, and then I played best part of over a decade with Paul then, with Neath and the Ospreys in Wales. And came across Paul and became firm mates. And we always did well in the scrum. And Lynn was lucky enough to sort of invite me to train with the first team. And so slowly, Vach get in there. You know, my parents even funded my first year there. Like you'd get sort of bonuses for winning and this type of stuff, but I wasn't paid by Neath. So my parents would like help me. I was still living at home anyway. So, I'd go training with a guy called Andrew Howells and Tristan Davis from Aston Villa. So they'd go over the valley and so I'd train with them. I loved it. It was such a good club. It was, you were kind of done by 11 every day. You'd get in early, you'd get in for the weights like 8 o'clock, you'd be done by 11 and you'd be, back in Abercrombie then by 12. So it was I loved it. It got a little bit more professional as time went on, but it kind of stopped then. I think we started training twice a day, which was unheard of, and we had to stop it, and because the boys were unhappy. But I think Lynn was unhappy as well. But I loved it. It was a great club, great boys. He was everything I expected from what you hear about Neath. You know, I think when Jiffy played it, the team was like full of crazy guys. But we certainly had a team in the last year of Neath as a professional team. Crazy guys, but from a different sort of perspective. I think we had 7 boys who were bloody drink driving bans. So it was ridiculous. And but Lynn's clever. So the few of them got sacked. So Lynn got them in on cheap contracts. So he was quite clever, like that, Lynn.
It's clear that you enjoyed your time at Neath, Adam. And you mentioned something interesting there, that your mum and dad funded you to sort of carry on playing. Was that the moment where you thought, actually, this could potentially be something I want to pursue as a career, or did that come further down the line to you?
Like, I'd never thought of it before. I'd never played for, like, Wales under 21s or anything. Oh, sorry, Wales under 19s or anything like that. But, they kind of looked at it from the perspective of... I didn't go to university. My brother went to university, went to Loughborough, and I didn't, so they kind of looked at that first year as like a university year for me then, just to help me out as much as I could. And, my mum's a teacher, my dad was a mechanic, and, weren't overly like, weren't from working class background. We were working class background family. Grandfather's a miner, the other dad was a, he was in the war, and then he was a bloody cattleman, and very efficient porter of fish. My other grandfather, I think, that's what it was like. That's what used to feed the family. We'd go take my dad down the river and like have to port fish to feed the family after the, when he was a kid. So he was all working class, but they were amazing. Never wanted for anything. They were massive supporters all through my career, and it was my dad would. Even when I was playing when I was in college, he'd come and watch me. He'd be in work at 5 o'clock every morning or 5:30, and he'd come and watch me play for college wherever I was playing around Wales, whether it's Ystrymynach or Cosh Keys or whatever it was, and he'd always be there. And then come Neath, and they were both there every game, so very supportive.
And from Neath, Adam, obviously comes the Ospreys. And in that sort of rugby journal article, you talk about the moment where sort of the team was getting formed, and if I'm right in saying it was in a vodka revolution, right. And I mean, most of my chats with Rob about rugby are in vodka revolution there where we live. But that must have been quite a surreal moment for you to be sat there.
Yeah.
As a young player, going into a new team is always tough, but sort of been at the start of something must have been even stranger for you.
Yeah, because I just been picked to go on the Welsh tour in the summer, and I remember having a phone call from Lynn saying, "Oh look, we're going to merge with Swansea." I was like, because there was a lot of chat about the North Wales development team, and I'd been kind of put forward to go up there, so all this type of stuff. But I was happy to be in the Neath Swansea side, and he said, "Oh look, we're going to triple your wages," which was amazing, but still wasn't probably 22 grand, isn't it? So it wasn't there was no footballer's money, certainly. It was good. It was a weird one because obviously the jersey was black. There was a lot of Swansea fans would be the Maltese crosses on the jersey, you know, there wasn't really anything from Swansea on it, apart from there was a little bit of, you know, white, and the away jersey was the white jersey, like the Swans. And so we, it was a strange one. We all were told to come down and do a Q&A. Shane Williams came in the white jersey. Scott Gibbs came in the black jersey. Everyone was just sort of mingling around. There's about, must have been, can't be more than 100 people in there and a few fans. And it was just like, opened the questions up. And I think Blythe, the chairman, opened the questions up. And he was all about the jersey. There was no like positivity around, you know, we're merging two good sides together. We've got a lot of good players. It was all about, oh, why haven't got anything Swansea based? Why is it black and why is it a Maltese cross? So it was surreal, and the fact like it was very Welsh, it was very tribal, and there's still fans from Neath I know wouldn't go and watch the Ospreys now, sort of all these years later, 17 years later. So Wales is a funny place like that. But no, it was good. Look, we went on to do good things. We did that, you know, it took us a while. The first year we think we'd won a 10-game losing streak at one point, and then we benefited mainly from having a year together, but we also benefited from the Celtic Warriors. So we got Sonny Parker in, Cobain, Ryan Jones, David Bishop, these type of guys, you know, good players. And so we did well out of that, which was actually quite a horrible situation, you know, just boys just being auctioned off to be the highest bidder. So that was horrible, but you know, we got a good few players from that. And we had a good side, and it was exciting to be part of the Ospreys because we had, you know, Mike Cuddy and Roger Blythe, you know, the other guys as well. They were, you know, they backed the club and wanted us to go on to bigger things. So, you know, when all of a sudden you get the Justin Marshalls coming in, your Mike Phillips is, you know, Jerry Collins, Matty Olaf, Philo Tiatia, you know, Jason Spices, a lot of these guys are coming in. It was an exciting time to be involved in it.
Yeah, you mentioned those big names there, Adam, that come in, and I know the term Galacticos has been used around the Ospreys, but for you, do you see it as the Galacticos, or a mixture of both, because you did still have those kind of roots in the team as well?
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that does pee me off a bit about it is the fact they call it the Galacticos. We did have some rock stars like Tommy Bowe came in as well, you know, these type of guys, but the bread and butter for me was, you know, was the front five. And pretty much everyone of our front five was homegrown. Yeah, you had Paul James, Duncan, Hugh Bennett, Hibbard, myself, you know, Alan Wayne, Ian Evans, Jonathan Thomas came through Swansea, all be from Pembroke. You know, there was no, the front five were, and we were, you know, without wanting to be, our scrum and our forward pack was probably as strong as like the individuals we had. That was probably one of the best collective parts of our game. The fact we had a good scrum, we had a good line out. A pack, and the fact it was all, you know, all homegrown. So that's the one thing that kind of rankles me when they say this, that yes, we had Jerry Collins, yes, we had Matthew Hall, these guys were amazing, and you know, I'd love to see that type of guy come back to the Ospreys. But the fact we had our whole front five was homegrown was certainly pretty satisfying for me, anyway.
And I know you must be sick of the nickname of the Hair Bears with Duncan Jones, but does that kind of put a smile on your face because people do recognise that you two played alongside each other despite all the big names?
Yeah, mate, it was never anything we planned or anything. We just kind of came back. I came back from the 21s World Cup, so, and I dyed my hair blonde, so I kind of grew it out. Duncan had just started seeing his wife Jo, and I knew Jo in college, and Jo definitely told him to grow his hair a bit longer because he looks better. So, we just grew together. Obviously, the surnames and the same position confuses everyone. Yeah, so I know we were called other things as well, but it was a fun time to be involved in it. I wouldn't say either of us ever wanted to court the limelight, but it was just something, certainly with the hair then gets dragged towards you.
And people may remind themselves of you, Adam, because of that sort of link up with Duncan. But obviously, you moved from Ospreys to Cardiff Blues, and I think another one of the standout moments that we've talked about when you were playing there for Cardiff is the attempt to drop goal against Munster that seems to have done the rounds on social media. Yeah. I mean, I think you did something for Scrum 5, a podcast for them, and it said, oh, you didn't realise the ball was coming towards you. what do you make of that moment? Because it seems to have got a lot of views on you.
I wish I'd gone over. But yeah, it was a tough year that for me. The whole situation, you know, not being with the Ospreys and then leaving and then going to the Blues. It was tough, and you know, it was a bit of a it was a weird year with the Blues anyway. You know, Mark Hammett coming in, you know, everyone expected big things, and then all of a sudden he's gone sort of January time, and so it was just, it was bizarre. And then that just probably added to the bizarreness of it all, me trying to drop goal. And it was straighter than I thought. But yeah, for some reason, Lloyd Williams, scrum half. Yeah, Christ, I played with him. Yeah, he passed me the ball for some reason, and I thought, oh, we had a penalty anyway, so I thought I'd just have a pop. And I'd prefer to went over, but no, it was, at least it was one of the more cheery things of the season.
It was the running away with a smirk on your face that really took him.
Yeah. Embarrassed, I don't know what to do really.
Because Rob showed me, and I was like, surely the game's done and dusted by that time, but it's 21 all.
Yeah, it was, yeah, but we had the penalty, so I thought, oh,
might as well
have a crack. I did look, my ankles were very heavily strapped, so maybe I didn't have the flexibility in my ankle to get enough elevation on the ball, but it was blind panic more than anything.
And you've not been doing any kicking masterclasses with the Quins lads, have you, since you've been?
No, we used to, after the training session on the Friday in the Stoop, the coaches have a kicking comp, and obviously we've got Nick Evans, who was,
yeah, I was gonna say,
one of the great kickers. He has to kick left footed. We have Sean Long now, who apparently kicked 2,000 odd points for St. Helens, but you wouldn't know because his left foot, well, I haven't seen him kick a drop goal over yet, so I'm. Because I've seen some of the ones he's put over for St. Helens to win games, or win massive games, and I see him on the field trying to kick a drop goal, it just baffles me. He is shocking.
And just before we go on to sort of your international time, Adam, more of a serious note really, looking back at your time at Ospreys, I mean, how much did you enjoy it? Because, you know, you made so many appearances, and you mentioned before that, you know, you did so well domestically, and Europe was always something you strive for as a team, but just couldn't get over that final hurdle.
I loved it. We had such a good bunch of boys. Lynn was amazing, you know, and Lynn went, and we had John Humphries, as much as Sean Holly, you know. We had a great group, and yeah, as I said, it was exciting to have the the Jerry's, JC's coming in, the Philo Tiers, Marty Holler, these type of guys. It was class, and we didn't do as well as we should have. I think the year for us would have probably been 2010, I think, if we played Biarritz and we lost to Biarritz. The year before we got pumped by Munster in the quarterfinal, we got the year before that we lost to Saracens, who just I don't know. We played them a week before in the EDF Cup in the stadium and Millennium Stadium in the semi-final. We put 40 points to them. And I think they made two changes. I'm not sure they were. I think maybe Glenn Jackson came in and Richard Hill had come in. And they just transformed them. They beat us comfortably then. And they didn't beat us comfortably, but we should have. I think we underestimated them. But yeah, 2010, it was great winning all the leagues. Four of the Celtic leagues was amazing. If we pushed further a bit more in Europe, it would have been, you know, it would been good for the region as such a young region as well.
And you mentioned when we started talking about Ospreys, then Adam, that you, along with that came obviously your first call up for Wales around that time. I mean, just before we sort of go on to your debut, being against England, what was it like for you to first be involved with the Wales camp at that time?
I was terrified. I got called in late 2002 for a camp, like a 2-day camp in the Vale with, like, it wasn't a camp, it was like 60 players came there. So basically, 60 best players in Wales at the time was probably about 60 players and decent players at the time as well. But no, I'm only joking. It was I just went in and I was just nervous, you know, seeing, you know, Neil Jenkins and all these type of guys. I think Guy Young might have been there. A lot of them were the guys who still played now 2009, like Wyatt and Craig Cornell, and they were a few of those were there. But then you had like Rob McBride was there. And he was one of the first ones that came and, you know, introduced himself, which was amazing. So obviously seen Rob play a lot, and it was just a bit bizarre, really. It was I probably didn't say anything for 2 days. Just stood there, got on with it, and hid in the corner as much as I could.
And I'm not sure this was after your debut, Adam. You say there that you didn't say anything for 2 days, but I think you guys went on a tour to New Zealand. I don't think you played there, but it seemed like the team really bonded over there, because there was a story that you said you had a few pints and bumped into you going to be coach Warren Gatland at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to get him to sign me for Wasps. So Andrew Ho, the fitness coach, was out and about looking for us. You know, so we basically run it. Hampden's not particularly big, and the strip's not particularly big at all. So it's we just try to go from bar to bar, avoiding Horry. And it was a great night. And I sort of met Gats and had a bacon, a bacon triple cheeseburger. And I thought, this is the time for me to actually try to get into the Premiership and with the Wasps. But he didn't remember when I brought it up with him. So.
And just going back to your Wales debut, coming against England, I mean, what was that kind of experience for you like? Because you're at home, you're at Cardiff, it's against England, it has all the ingredients, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was just, obviously, I think it came on with probably about 18 minutes to go. I'd worked hard in pre-season, I'd worked my balls off in there, with the fitness and that, with Steve Hansen and Andrew Ho. So I was, I worked as hard as I could. And so I was amazing to get a cap. It was amazing, probably even more amazing to play against Jason Leonard in my first cap, which was, something. I looked at someone as an English player. I was allowed to look up to because he was my mother's favourite player. So there wasn't many English players you were to like, and certainly in my mother's mind. So, and he was the one. So to play against him was special as well. And we got hammered, but it was our sort of first team against their second team, and they beat us comfortably. And but England, they were class at the time. And but we got a bit close to them in the World Cup. But it was an amazing experience. The whole World Cup was class. It was, Scott Johnson getting in, all the sort of Australian legends to speak to us, from sharing apartments with players rather than hotels, seeing the country. It was doing so well again in the quarterfinals. It was unreal, to be fair. I look back at it now, I probably didn't appreciate how good it was at the time. But no, it was, fantastic.
You're one of only a few players to win three Grand Slams for Wales. Obviously, as a Welsh supporter myself, very proud of that. But how proud are you to be able to achieve that? And which one is your favourite?
It was certainly the first one. Obviously a group of seven, post-war guys, which is class. I think the last one in that. I probably offered most. I probably did most in it. Yeah. I was more of a senior player. No one's senior player, but I was more of a cog, in the team then, and probably offered more to the team then. For 2005, I think I was just happy to be there. Just happy Steve Hansen going back to New Zealand, and then Mike Ruther was playing for me longer than like half hour. So yeah, that in 2008, Gats came in and Sean, obviously changed everything. So we caught everyone a little bit surprised. But no, 2012 was probably my favourite one because I was more involved in it and offered more to the team, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure as well, Abim, I know it wasn't a grand slam for you, but that victory over England in 2013 is up there as well.
Oh yeah, it was. That was probably, yeah.
Look at Rob smiling.
I don't know if it's up as a grand slam, but it was just the whole. I think we played our game against Scotland, and then we watched the England Italy game, and they only beat them by 8 points, or beat them by which. Needed us to win by 8 points then, maybe. And so we knew, Christ, this is a chance here. Yeah? We thought they'd stuff Italy and, we'd probably just have to spoil the party, beat them a spoiler party, a chance to win the championship as well. But yeah, as it transpired, it all worked in our favour. And I think that was one of those games you knew from probably a few times in my life I've gone into an anthem and knew we were going to win the test. Just how the stadium was that day is, you obviously don't know. We have that feeling, you're going to win this test, and it was class. It was the first time they sort of on the chorus bit of the in Rad Van Aerde, they sort of stopped the music, and it was just the crowd. And speak to the English boys in the Lions tour after it was, they didn't know I was coming.
No better feeling than beating England. I get a lot of stick for living in England, born in England, yet support Wales because of my mum and my grandparents. But no better feeling, the underdog.
Yeah, exactly.
Small nation.
All those years of don't want to go down too far down the rabbit hole of why the Welsh hate the English, but
I think that's a whole podcast in itself, Adam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And obviously lining up alongside you that day was your good mate Alan Wynne-Jones. You've spoken so well about him. I know last year for the Six Nations as well, you spoke so well about him. I mean, we see him, and Rob will definitely see him as such a leader and a warrior on the pitch. And What is he like on the pitch? But what more so is he like off the pitch?
Oh, and he's on the pitch. Like when he was captained me, he was a lot younger than us. To be fair, like he's still, so he was almost like he's probably grown into the role the older he's got. And the, with his age, you know, he's probably become a different sort of captain where everyone looks up to him as a leader, father figure, probably all these different things. But no, I mean, he's unreal. He's such a good player. My brother texted me the other night, actually. He was asking about the Michael Jordan documentary and, you know, how competitive he was and, you know, how he was with the players. And, you know, I'm not saying Al was quite like that, but, you know, there's certainly, you know, that there's an element of that about him, you know, not around how he speaks to them, but how he trains, how he pushes himself every time. And, you know, how he, you know, he's always the same when he first came through. You know, he was this big lump. He was always 100%. If you're holding a bag, he was 100%. If you're doing anything, even like a warm-up drill, he'd want to do it 100%. And, you know, even with the Lions, when he got subbed in the first test in Australia, he ran off as fast as he could because he wanted to prove to the coaches he wasn't tired enough. And so, he's driven like that. But no, off the field, he's mellowed out. He's chilled out a lot over the last sort of 5 years since he's had Mally Have, his daughter, and Ava. But, people don't see really what he's like, you know. And, he's very... I don't know if I call him a gentle giant because he can be a bit of a pain in the ass and can be a bit grumpy, can he? But he's definitely, he's not nothing like he is on the field, off the field.
And he's been part of this era for Wales, which has seen you guys get really, really successful with the Six Nations, but also go really deep into World Cup tournaments as well, Adam. I mean, just to go back to sort of 2007, if you don't mind, because that was sort of the end, the start, if that makes sense. So How do you reflect on 2007 and kind of what changed in those 4 years for you guys to get to a semi-final of the World Cup?
I just, obviously Gats coming in and there was a different type of professionalism, but just not the, probably not professionalism, the boys were professional, but it was probably just a different type of game plan, different type of mindset, really. You know, it was very, sometimes in before that, it could be a bit more player-led, but not player-led in a good way. You know, it was, you know, taking the easy way out, and you know, you were kind of made, you know, under no illusions that you were going to work hard with Gats, and you know, you get your rewards. So that was a massive thing. And it was, you know, like I think the first Grand Slam, you can shock people. You know, you change a few, you tweak a few things, but you shock teams, and I think we did a little bit there. But and obviously, people say it's a shock, but then obviously their records, or the Gats' record then over the other years then is unreal, you know. Obviously, the 08 World Cup in, well, a lot of Lions players in 09. World Cup in 2011, again, Lions, Grand Slam, Six Nations title, another Grand Slam, another World Cup semi. So, you know, it's no fluke. And, and I'll be in there and be in that sort of driving force through it all. You know, gets these boys who come in, they realise what sort of level they have to be at to play. And you obviously, over the years then, you pick up your sort of Tippericks and your John Davises and your Dan Biggers. You know, these type of guys as the senior players, Ken Owens has come from, to see how he came from where he first came in the Welsh squad to what he, you know, Lions. And he was a good player, but just like, a bit like myself, didn't want to train too hard, but the fact again, he was so 100% that it's he's come on leaps and bounds. And got having Al there as that sort of driving force is probably a massive part of it as well. You know, he's him and Gats, I think, relationship grew, and then every player wants to play for them.
And you mentioned in previous interviews as well, Adam, about kind of Warren Gatland did help change this new era and the face of Welsh rugby, I think, is the term that you use. And I know your relationship around sort of when you retired from the game is well documented with him. But how do you look back on that period now?
Oh, he was massive. He changed my whole. He changed my career. Him coming in, you know, as I said, he had good guys around me though. With, you know, you had a guy called Craig White who was a fitness coach with him, and John Williams, nutritionist, Sean, these guys, Muckers. You know, they kind of all chipped in to change me, and it didn't give me the carrot that, you know, if I was performing and in this sort of weight, then we're going to pick you, and that was all I needed. And yeah, so he was a massive part of it. And obviously I'd like to go on a bit further and Grand Slam, played a couple of years longer, or years or longer, but I was appreciative of everything he did with me.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what Mark mentioned when we were sort of planning the podcast, Adam, you know, you want, it's a, it was about, I think, a week, last week was 4 years ago since you made your 100th and final test appearance, obviously 5 with the Lions and 95 with Wales. I mean, when international career was cut short, I mean, how tough was that for you to take? Because at the time you were still playing some really good rugby.
Oh, it was horrendous. It was I think the whole sort of year after it, I struggled to talk about it. I got subbed off for a half an hour in South Africa in my 95th test, my 100th one. And it was almost like the whole, my career had gone, totally flipped around from when the start to finish. But I think the big one for me was, I kind of get a different view of Mark Hammett to a lot of people having Cardiff. I remember having the phone call off Gats and then Robin saying, oh, look, we're not picking you in this autumn international squad. And I remember sitting in the car just crying my eyes out for about 20 minutes. Just didn't, hadn't, for the last 11 years, it'd been my sort of, part of my day-to-day life, playing for Wales. And, I get now, coaches don't think you're good enough, you're not good enough, then I get that now. But at the time, it was really tough, I remember, looking out at the Cardiff City football field, just like bawling my eyes out. And it was, to be fair, it was Mark Hammett who spoke to me, a while, it wasn't a while, in the afternoon, I think, after the session. He said, how are you feeling? And he was like, it's obviously a shit question, but how are you feeling? And he was like, we just had a chat, and just, it kind of, just kind of, he's kind of related things, so it's a bit like, losing someone, losing a part of your family, unfortunately, a couple of years later for me, when I lost my mum, it's nothing like losing your family, but, but at the time, it was like an analogy, which I kind of, clung on to a bit, I was lucky he was there, because we didn't have a long chat, like 10 minutes, but it was a good chat and kind of put things into perspective a little bit. And it was a tough time. I struggled, it's, again, I pretty much I bottle things up, and I'd rather just keep everything in rather than speak about stuff. I guess it was an element of bitterness as well there for a while, but I think it's funny, it was times when I, wasn't really watching the rugby much, but then I kind of found myself now going back full circle to being like a fan again. I think when Al won the Grand Slam, I was crying in the box in the stadium watching it. When they lost to South Africa in the semi-final, it was like, I was in the hotel before a game, and it's just like, just see myself filling up, because just what the boys have gone through. And, we're pretty, the Welsh are pretty passionate, and it was a tough one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've mentioned sort of, the emotions at the time for you, Adam, were tough, but you said it there, actually, that you're now, more of a fan of Wales, because, and you've got a bit more perspective on things as well. So how was that experience like for you, being a fan of Wales?
Oh, man, I love it. It's, I grew up watching it. I grew up, my mum gave me a clipper on you, because I was embarrassed to watch, embarrassed to be a Welsh fan when we lost to France by 30 points, and next, back of the head. But I've gone full circle. I'm very passionate Welsh. I was watching a documentary about football. It's not just the rugby. It's just, me and my mate were watching Wales Portugal in semi final in Woking. When we lost in the European Championships a few years ago, and it's just, it was again just we both bloody balling our eyes out. We'd had a few pints, so it was a bit different. It was. It's just, that's how the Welsh are. They're very, very passionate, very emotional, and certainly around the sport as well. And I'm glad to be back in that sort of mindset where one of the Welsh boys would do well all the time.